Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to On the Ball, a Norwich City podcast from The Athletic. I'm Steve Sanders, aka at NCFC Numbers on Twitter, not aka Michael Bailey. Michael is taking a short break. Don't worry, we haven't lost him to lockdown. He is coming back. This is the 50th edition of On the Ball, and Michael will be back to complete his half century very soon. I'm just playing the night watchman role for a few weeks. But enough tortured cricketing metaphors. We have a football team to talk about, and we've got a football team to talk about who are winning games again. We'll be going back over this episode over killer through balls and sumptuous first touches. We'll be discussing cruel runnings with Tim's recent form. We'll ask if there's a worse type of penalty than the cheeky chip that drifts harmlessly over the bar. And then we'll all agree on the basis of one good performance that the good times are definitely back. So for all of this, I am fortunate to be joined by a stalwart podcaster. I hope you don't mind me calling you stalwart. A member of the On the Ball podcast team and a Norwich City fan, Ben Mouncer. How are you?
Hello, Steve. Stalwart is fine. I'd have probably drawn the line at veteran, but stalwart is good. Yeah, I'm good. I'm positively radiant after our best performance of the season. On Saturday. So yeah, obviously just the two of us tonight. How's this meant to work? Am I meant to kind of debate with myself? Am I arguing with myself? Or are you going to answer your own questions?
Well, I mean, I'm not much of an arguer, but I'm happy to argue. If you need someone to argue with, I will be that person. You're going to have to answer my questions as well. Otherwise, I'm going to get very, very tired of the sound of my own voice. We'll get on to the main act now, the headline act. Like all good festivals, we have more than one headline act for you this week, and we're going to be talking about Norwich City's front four from yesterday. We will get onto them individually shortly, but first of all, let's talk about the performance, particularly in the first half. There will be a few of me saying this is the first time that Norwich City have, because it is the first time they've done quite a few things. It was the first time that they scored three in a league game and the first time they scored with the first two shots since the Man City win. And it was also the first time that they scored three and a half in the league since the win against QPR way back in April 2019. So first question, Ben, are Daniel Farke's Norwich City officially back?
It feels like we are moving towards a state of being back. I think that's probably a sensible answer, right? We've got a couple of tough games coming up this week, which we'll talk about later. And I think after those two games, we may have a real sense of that we're back. But, you know, we were looking at this week, you know, with the matches away at Brentford and Bristol City and thinking after the positive results, if maybe not performances, well, Birmingham was good, but Wickham, the performance wasn't so good. We were kind of looking at these two games as a measuring post of where we truly are. And I think Norwich have come out of them, especially obviously the win over Bristol City at the weekend, in a really good place. And that kind of cohesion and attacking fluidity that defined our championship winning season two seasons ago was very much there on Saturday at Ashton Gate.
Yeah, and I guess it kind of underlines the fact that those games against Rotherham, Birmingham, Wickham, where perhaps we weren't so great, but ground out those results, how important they were as a platform for what we saw, maybe not so much against Brentford, but Bristol City. I mean, presumably you would agree with me that Saturday was the best we've played for some time.
Yeah, I think so. It's definitely the best performance of this season. And although we're going to come on and talk about the attacking players, and rightly so, I felt like that there were good performances all over the pitch, and our kind of management of the game tactically was also really, really good. Because there were spells when Bristol City, who are a decent side, actually, I think, and they did threaten us. But I think even in those situations, we managed the game quite well. And we obviously we raced into an early lead, and then they got one back straight away. So it was a very strange start to the game. But generally, I think, I don't know, that we seem to have that kind of control that Daniel Farke wants from his teams, perhaps more so than at any point in the season that I can remember.
Let's talk about the front four then. And I want to talk about Marco Stiepemann first. We featured Mario Vrančić heavily last week playing in that role, but Stiepemann had a huge impact on Saturday. It was his pass for Pukki's goal. And he could have had one or two more assists, in fact. So where are we with Marco Stiepemann at the moment?
I think a lot of Norwich fans are really keen to see him play in that number 10 role. And when you see how he performed on Saturday, especially in the first half, you can understand why. I mean, obviously, we've weirdly kind of struggled to fill that number 10 role. Certainly last season, obviously, Stiepemann excelled in that role in the title-winning season. But I think the qualities that he showed in that campaign really came to the fore on Saturday. And I think what he offers is kind of danger whenever he's on the ball. There's always a sense that he is going to do something. And I think that was really true on Saturday, that like the pass for Pukki's goal was a classic kind of steepy, ruthless kind of pass straight through the middle, Pukki finish, bang, like very, very clinical. And I think, although sometimes he does kind of look a bit awkward on the ball, there is that sense that something is always going to happen with him. And I'm not sure, maybe with some of our other creative midfielders who've played in the 10 role, obviously we haven't seen Kieran Dowell a lot, but I'm not sure whether that's always the case. What I would say is that I think, what you don't want to do with Marco Stiepemann is give him the space to kind of turn and then like impact the game facing the attacking way, yeah. Because he is then able to either unleash a wicked finish that he actually did at Ashton Gate, I think 2 seasons ago, or he's able to play a pass like he did for Timu Pukki. So I think Bristol City did learn that in the second half. They closed him down better and I think nullified him a bit more. I just think he, of all the kind of tools in our attacking armory, he is one I find really valuable because he is unlike anything else we've got.
Yeah.
So that's where I think we are. I think we're in a position now where we can safely say he's going to be an important cog of the machine this season. And it is a machine because of the regularity of the matches, we are going to have to rotate. And I'm sure Vrančić will play in that role again. I'm sure Todd Cantwell, who, you know, I'm sure would love to play number 10, will play that role at some point in the season. But I feel like with Stiepemann, he proved on Saturday that he could do real damage again this season, I think.
Yeah, and I get the feeling that Teemu Pukki loves playing in front of Marco Stiepemann. You know, just the service that he gets. And what I love about Stiepemann is that he's kind of given the license in this team to be that number 10 and to kind of flow and to try things and for things to go wrong. It's kind of allowed and it's accepted because we know that when it goes right, it can be really, really effective. And I think that's why it was right for him to be the first player, despite him having a brilliant game, it's right for him to be the first player to be taken off because, as you said, things weren't quite coming off for him at the beginning of the second half in the same way they were at the beginning of the first. And it's at that point where you go, okay, you've done the damage now, in a good way, obviously. time to kind of shore things up. So that felt like a good tactical move.
You hear a lot about no-nonsense defenders, but in a way, he's like a kind of no-nonsense attacker, isn't he? Like he just kind of does things and he's like direct in his play. He's aggressive. And yeah, it feels like he can make things happen at any point.
Talking about Teemu Pukki, let's go on to him next. No one had scored a league goal or more than one league goal in a game since Pukki's Newcastle hat-trick. So this was a rarity, another one on Saturday. He could have had more than two though, couldn't he? There were a few openings in that first half alone. And again, it feels like a question, where are we with Teemu Pukki? Because he's scoring goals, but has he got that sharpness back that he had when he was at his peak with us?
I would say yes, on the basis of obviously the two goals he scored. Certainly the first one, it was a very instinctive finish, the first one. I think he almost sort of toe-poked it, but that to me kind of made me think of Pukki of 2 seasons. We keep talking about 2 seasons ago. I know Michael doesn't want us to talk about 2 seasons ago.
Oh, I absolutely do want to talk about 2 seasons ago. I'm running the show now.
And the element of luck, obviously, with the second goal being deflected. But again, I think he got that shot away, which we're kind of so used to seeing him do when he's in peak form. What interests me is obviously he was up against a three-man central defence on Saturday, and if I think about when we played Bournemouth and Derby, two defeats when we were, and both of those teams played a three-man defence, and we kind of struggled actually in the final third to create those chances. I think here was an example of us coming up against a team that plays three at the back who were actually prepared to press and maybe had a bit more adventure. And I think that maybe played into Pukki's hands a bit, because when you have three central defenders, this kind of channels between the two wider central defenders are probably bigger than they are in, like, when you've just got two defenders. I know that sounds strange, but I think, and he kind of exploited those gaps really effectively. I was going to come onto this in a bit, but the kind of passes to him, not just Stiepermans, which I've spoken about already, but the pass from Sorensen for his second goal. Fantastic pass, great runs, great passes, and obviously Pukki finishes. But I think it's interesting to kind of try and answer what the question. I kind of feel like he is maybe getting back, which is great. And I'm not afraid to kind of say that I had doubts, Steve. I had a lot of doubts about Timo Pukki, especially how he performed. And I made this point on the pod. I've made it a couple of times before, actually. Like I had serious doubts about whether we'd ever even see him sort of hit the heights that he did of two seasons ago. Damn, said it again. But and obviously whether he's going to go on and score nearly 30 goals this season, you know, we don't know if that will happen, but certainly there are encouraging signs from his finish against Wickham and his finishes here.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, to expect him to get 29 league goals, 30 goals in a season again, that probably will never happen again because he set such outstanding levels. But what he does have already is four goals in eight starts and one sub appearance. So you're looking at a 1-in-2 ratio there. So it's really not a bad start at all. And you still feel like he's not at his sharpest, although completely agree that the finish for the first goal he took so quickly, that felt like vintage Pukki. Let's talk about someone who we can't compare to 2 years ago. We can completely move away from that now. Shemi Poeta. How did he get on? I feel like that's kind of the role on the left of the three is the most hotly contested for Norwich this season. We've seen Hernandez there, we've seen Cantwell there, we've seen Adam Eder there, all starting. And this was Shemi Poeta's second start. He maybe wasn't the most outstanding of the four, but he certainly carried a threat, particularly on the counter.
Yes, definitely. I think his output generally was quite hit and miss. But I think what he did do was he stretched the play, which maybe gave some of our attacking players, the more central attacking players, a bit more space. And I think that's kind of valuable, really, in that left hand role. And he found himself in the second half, actually, in a lot of very good attacking positions where he maybe could have passed it to Pukki to give Pukki his hat trick. But actually, I think they were good goal scoring opportunities for him. And I think his goal scoring record was one of the reasons we were certainly interested in him. So, yeah, I feel like there's a lot of promise with Poeta. And at the moment, it is promise. He's still settling in, first season and everything. But I think completely understood his selection against Bristol City. Obviously, Sorensen not being a left back at all isn't going to offer the same kind of attacking support that Kintia may have. So to have kind of that natural width offered by Poeta made complete sense to me. And I do like the fact that he just runs with the ball, like, because most of our attacking players don't really do that. And he just runs in a straight line. He gets his head down and runs in a straight line. And obviously it doesn't always come off, but I'm sort of quietly optimistic about his potential this season. And I think he played an important role for the team on Saturday. Not necessarily, he made some mistakes, and I think his pass completion percentage was the lowest of anyone in that front four. But then he's that kind of player. His pass percentage isn't going to be as high as Emi Buendia's, for example. I don't think it will be, but what he offers is something different. When Kintia is back, do I see kind of a natural dynamic between those two players on the left-hand side? I'm not entirely sure how that partnership would work.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned the Brentford game and the lack of threat that we had from on the left-hand side. I saw a post on Twitter somewhere. We didn't actually complete a pass into the box from the left-hand side. Everything came in from the right. Probably not entirely surprising, but I think you're right. While Kintia's out, we kind of need that Poeta threat from the left. Interestingly, the most encouraging thing I thought from his performance on Saturday was that when he cut inside and picked in the first half, picked Buendia's run out with that pass when Buendia hit Bentley in the face. I thought that showed really good vision, and that's the kind of thing that Hernandez sometimes lacks. So if he can continue doing that, then maybe.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't think we should like typecast him as just a head down merchant, hug the touchline kind of winger. Mm. I do actually think he's demonstrated, vision. I think it was his, excuse me. I think it may have been one of his first appearances. This is terrible recollection from me, but I remember thinking at the time that whatever game it was against, you know, insert championship opposition here, he was certainly coming into more central areas at times and demonstrating kind of intelligence and awareness of players around him, which is obviously very important for Daniel Farke that his attacking players do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be interesting to see how his kind of season develops, I think.
Yeah. And I was a big fan of Daniel Farke taking off Marco Steepman to bring on Kenny McLean, which gave us a three behind Pookie of Shemi, Kenny and Emmy. Which I hope we see that again at some point. There you go. What a link that was into Emi Buendia, it's crazy that he's still here, quite honestly. Ben, I'm going to do that awkward thing of quoting your tweet back to you. This is what you said on Saturday. You said, "Can't believe we're getting the chance to watch Emi Buendia at this level again. Skill, desire, movement, aggression. Just a joy to watch when he plays like that." Can you elaborate on that in more than 280 characters?
Yeah, I probably can. I mean, I could probably fill a whole podcast talking about Emi Buendia, to be honest. I said joy to watch because really, like, we all watch football for joy ultimately. And when you see a player like that playing like that, you just want to carry on watching it. Like, I'd have happily just carried on watching him playing in that match for hours and hours and hours. He was great, wasn't he? And I think what impressed me as much as his work on the ball, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute, and his amazing goal, was his attitude and how that translated into kind of his role in the team and his pressing, which was excellent. I don't know, you might have stats on ground covered, Steve. I was trying to find these before we came on the pod, but I've never had
access to those, so unfortunately I can't back you up on that.
It felt to me like certainly he, of the attacking four, he covered a lot of ground. His pressing was really good. His movement off the ball to try and get into positions where he can get the ball and cause havoc was superb. And obviously the goal.
I mean, the goal is absolutely tremendous. And it was an incredible first touch. Although, I mean, I think back to some of the other Emi Buendia first touches. It might not even be in the top three. I mean, you think back to that, the one against Hull where he kind of did the scorpion kick. There was a ridiculous one in that QPR game as well that he kind of brought over his shoulder. He's just always had that ability. I've never known anything like it, for somebody to kind of effectively at waist height bring the ball down with their...
Yeah, and he did it again in the second half, didn't he?
Yes.
In the penalty area as well. But also for his goal, I think his second touch was kind of even, you know, not as kind of beautiful, but it was the second touch really just made the goal, because the first touch, it kind of, while he brought it down majestically, some of the words I'm using here are ridiculous, really, while he brought it down very well, the second touch straight away to kind of balance himself and position himself to score the goal was excellent. And we know he needs to add more goals to his game. We've spoken about that before. But I think regardless of stats, and I'm not going to sort of bin stats off here, Steve, but he scored a goal here, so fair play. But when he's performing like that and putting in that much effort and demonstrating that much quality, it's just great to watch. If you know, regardless of the result, really, but obviously in this occasion he was able to contribute directly to a positive result with a goal, which was kind of the icing on the cake.
Yeah, I think people see, you know, when he kind of throws his arms up in the air when things aren't going so well, people look at that and think, oh, he's having a strop again. I'm not so sure that is the case. I think he's just somebody that has incredibly high standards of himself and teammates, and you kind of take that when you get a performance like Saturday's. What you said about the goal, it was just three perfect touches, wasn't it? I don't want to compare it necessarily to the goal that Dennis Bergkamp scored against Leicester where he kind of just brings it down perfectly, but it was one of those where all the three touches had to be right, and that's what made it so aesthetically pleasing.
I think I saw a video on Twitter, and credit to the person who posted this, but the post was of Leo Messi's goal against Nigeria, I think, in the World Cup, the last World Cup, where it was a very similar kind of goal, where I think it might have been three touches, control, set, shoot, and it was really clinical, fantastic goal.
So So there we go. We've just compared Emi Buendia to Dennis Bergkamp and Lionel Messi in the space of about 30 seconds.
Can I, on the attitude point there, Steve, sorry, before we move on. I found it interesting when him and Max Aarons have had a bit of a tete-a-tete in the second half. I think Aarons was maybe frustrated that Buendia didn't pass him. I can't remember which way it's around, but I think that just shows, you know, we're in a position in the game where we're comfortable playing really well. But these two like players on the right, who obviously are so important to our team, like just continually want to just get it right every time and be better and have a positive impact, which I like to see, actually. I like to see a bit of, and obviously not to Lee Bowyer and Kieran Dyer extent, but a bit of verbals between teammates, I think, in the right context is good to see.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Okay, so we've kind of covered the Bristol City game in a fair bit of detail already, so we will rattle through the things that we are not going to talk about. So these are the things that have happened over the last 7 days, but we're going to kind of quickly go through them so that we don't take up too much of your time. So Bristol City was the second game, of course, this week. The first one was a 1-1 draw at Brentford. Norwich City were behind for an hour in that game. Ivan Toney's header cancelled out by just an absolute pile driver by Kenny McLean. Flew into the bottom corner. Kind of nicely paralleled with the 61 minutes that they were behind at Griffin Park 2 years ago. Obviously, it wasn't the as glamorous as the Bristol City game, so we will kind of rattle through the points. But Ben, could you kind of give us 30 seconds on your take and maybe some of the bit of tactical analysis on that match?
It was one of those Championship games where you kind of it was a bit scrappy, it was a bit ugly. Even though obviously there's a lot of quality on show from both sides, it felt like that the actual nature of the match, it kind of felt like, you know, there wasn't going to be a lot kind of in it in the end. And for Norwich to kind of come away from that, and although the goal was obviously very fortunate, I don't know, it kind of demonstrates the point that you made earlier about the ability to grind out results however you kind of do it, whether it's a beautiful Mario Vrančić free kick in the last minute, or a, as you described it, a pile driver from Kenny McLean, which was probably heading for the old Griffin Park if it didn't get deflected.
I mean, I don't know. As far as I know, that's still his goal. It's not been taken away from him.
Yeah. No, it is his goal. Yeah, it is his goal. And yeah, I think it was probably a better strike than I indicated there, but it certainly was obviously a very lucky deflection. But it all feeds into this kind of sense that things are maybe going our way again, which they definitely weren't. After Project Restart in the Premier League, where it was kind of the complete opposite. So things like that happening. And I think people came away from that game feeling like, actually, yeah, quite happy with that point, even though obviously there are some fans who are critical of the performance because we didn't steamroll a Brentford like some fans expect us just to, you know, fark a ball every team off the park. Yeah. It doesn't happen in the Championship. And, you know, a point away at Brentford, especially, you know, they had a comfortable win at the weekend, so they're obviously picking up a bit of momentum as well.
You're right. The context of that is the result that Brentford got at the weekend. I mean, they probably will be a top six team at the end of the season, you would expect. It felt like, talking about the second half, it felt like one of those games where the ball seemed like it was out of play for about half an hour of those 45 minutes. Like it was constantly out for long throws. And I think just to get that point and come away from it, you'd absolutely take it. And like you say, it's just not the kind of thing that's been going for us. So I say we take it and move on. One player who we haven't really spoken about, but we briefly, but not in terms of performances, is Jakob Sorensen, who filled in at left back for both games, and maybe filled in is a little bit harsh, in fact. He was given 4 minutes notice ahead of the Brentford game and did a pretty good job. You can read more about that in Michael's article in The Athletic, in which he is labelled Mr. Chill. I'm not clear whether that's a Norwich City nickname or one that Michael's given him.
Michael who was labelled Mr. Chill. No, okay, it's Sorensen.
Maybe it was like that Spider-Man meme where they both pointed at each other and went, "You're Mr. Chill, no, you are." let's talk about Yaka, but not Michael, though. Obviously, he gave away the penalty against Bristol City, but I would say pretty encouraging performances on the whole.
I think he was more involved against Brentford from what I saw. And then maybe not so much against Bristol City, and maybe a little bit more solid. Obviously, his pass for Pukki's goal, second goal, was fantastic. And then the tackle for the penalty is obviously the main negative point of his performance. I feel like he's done as well as you could expect him to do, right? I feel a bit sorry for him, but he seems like a kind of grounded kind of chap who has kind of taken it on the chin and has given his all and offers kind of a bit of physical. Obviously, we don't really know how his qualities will translate into a position that he's used to playing in yet, because we haven't seen him in midfield. We haven't seen him maybe at centre-back, where he has mooted to potentially play as well. But yeah, I think he's done fine, apart from the rugby tackle, but let's maybe skip over that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Christoph Zimmermann's been giving him lessons on how to tackle with your head. But
he was put in a difficult situation by a poor header from Grant Hanley as well.
Yes, it was.
He was already on the floor, and he was obviously trying to do anything to stop the attacker getting in there, and that happened. But I'm not going to at all criticise Jacob Lungi Sorensen, otherwise known as JLS, to me anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's a reference that I haven't heard for about 10 years. Yeah, I'm happy to go with JLS. We'll go back to the Bristol City game briefly then, because we have talked about the penalty. I mean, that penalty was bad. I mean, if you're going to go for the dink, you've got to get it right, haven't you? That's a key thing. I was trying to think, I can't think of a worse penalty that I've seen in a Norwich City game than that. And then poor Naki, I'm going to go Naki, that's what they were saying on commentary.
Yeah.
Well, then got hauled off 5 minutes later and just looked devastated, but it wasn't good, was it?
No, he had a bit of a stinker, Wells, really, because he set himself up for that amazing chance in the first half as well and then completely fluffed his lines. And I think he had another couple of shots of a bit wayward. I think that penalty, like, surely it's the first case of a goalkeeper saving a penalty without actually touching it. I mean, Krull got so far in his head. I doubt he's even kind of out of his head yet. He's trying to find his way out of Naki Wells's head as we speak. He's still trying to escape.
Yes, well, we will come on to Tim's role in all of that later. I'm pretty sure I could hear him sort of saying, "Yeah, come on, Naki," when he was walking up to take it. I'm sure that didn't help him. So away from the football, and this already feels like it's aged pretty badly in the space of 3 days, but obviously lockdown, we know now, we're heading back into that next week. So in that context, Delia's letter to Boris Johnson, not ideally timed, but
no.
Intentions were good behind that, right?
Yeah, I think they were. And obviously the club statement that kind of came from that 24 hours later, I think I liked it on Twitter because I was like, yeah, that sounds really good. And then sort of 24 hours later, I look like I'm sort of really out of touch with the state of the coronavirus crisis in the country, because, like, yeah, obviously we're not going to be going back to football grounds anytime soon. What a stupid idea. Yeah. I'm going to go and unlike that tweet maybe. But I don't know. Yeah. It's so difficult to say, isn't it? Like, obviously we're in a situation in this country now where we are going into lockdown. I don't think any of us I think we all expected it. I don't think any of us are against it, really. And obviously part of that is not going to Carrow Road, which is crap, but it is what it is at the moment. And football's going to carry on, as you said at the top of the show, Steve. So hopefully, you know, we can kind of get from it what we will. And if we keep winning matches, then that's something, right?
Absolutely, yes. And, well, I particularly like the last line as well, inviting Boris Johnson to come to Carrow Road, which then just had I've got an image in my head now of Boris Johnson standing in the lower Barclay with all the diehards and how that might go down.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
One player who has played a huge role over the last 7 days is Tim Krul, and Tim is our centrefold this week. Michael has this incredible knack of picking articles or features about players who then go on to do incredible things in the next few days. Tim's definitely one of those. His article went up on The Athletic last week. You can read that piece. It was a really good one, actually. He kind of talked to Tim about some of his best saves, about his last 2 years playing for Norwich City. There were some great stops that I'd completely forgotten about. So, yeah, we kind of had the full Tim Krul playbook in the last couple of games, didn't we, Ben? Some fantastic saves. A shot that maybe he could have done better with in the Bristol City game. And then, I'm just going to call it the penalty shithousery that you've already referred to. Yeah, sorry, parental warning for that one. Let's do the saves first, though. What was the best one? Because there were a few. But
for me, the best one was the save from Chris Martin's long-range effort. It was proper fingertip stuff, and it was a fantastic shot from Chris Martin. And it was such a good save that the commentator was convinced that Tim Krul got nowhere near it. so I think just for that alone, that save was the best. But his one as well from, I think it was a header from a corner, wasn't it, where he kind of clawed it away, was great reflexes as well. Yeah, I mean, yeah, for me, it's the Chris Martin fingertips.
Yeah, and I have to say, I initially with that one, I thought I heard two noises. So I thought, oh, he's got a touch on that. And then I think I watched, they showed the first two replays back and I thought, well, no, he hasn't touched it. And then they showed the really slow-mo one and you just saw the touch, and it was so close that you knew it must have been going in had he not touched it.
You should be a cricket umpire, Steve, with that hearing, mate.
Yeah, well, I would have had to have gone upstairs for Snicko. I feel like we've talked about cricket a lot already. Yeah, tremendous stuff. But I guess the context of the Brentford save, though, was the time it came in the game, 1-0 down, had that gone in, and it was a brilliant stop. And I think he made another good one from close range. I can't remember who had the chance, might have been Mbume. No, it was Canos, in fact. It would have been 2-0, and you kind of feel that's game over. So with that, plus the Rotherham penalty save early in the season, he is saving his points this year, isn't he?
Yeah, he definitely is. And, you know, his influence on the team is there for everyone to see, not just in his kind of performances and the way he is getting, like, leading to us getting more points than if he wasn't in between the sticks, which is, you know, exactly what you want from a goalkeeper. He adds so much more than that, I think. And we're probably going to talk about this a bit more, but what a piece of kind of recruitment he has turned out to be, really. And he's still only 32, which kind of for a goalkeeper is you'd say kind of peak, wouldn't you, really? And this is a guy who's played at the World Cup as a Netherlands international, is a current Netherlands international playing for us in the Championship. So yeah, he really is kind of at the top. I feel like he's at the top of his game. On your point on the goal Bristol City scored, I think maybe he could have done a bit better, but I don't know. There are a couple of instances there where we could have done a bit better, including preventing the kind of the pass from midfield in the first place, which created the chance for Bristol City. So yeah, I'm not pinning that goal purely on his shoulders.
Yeah, I think I am being slightly hypercritical there. It just took me back to 2 years ago again, when there were a few occasions. I seem to remember Swansea, where I think Daniel James scored one, and Rotherham at home as well, where Krul parried a couple into an area where perhaps it could have gone further away into danger. It is being hypercritical, but it also, you know, the thinking back then would have been, oh, it's another cruel mistake, whereas now we just don't expect he's come such a long way. It, you know, I hate the word journey, but if we're going to talk about his journey, then it has been an incredible one, like you say, a brilliant piece of recruitment. I was trying to think, actually, so when did the Virgil van Dijk injury happened, I was trying to think in Norwich City terms, who would be the worst player for that to happen to for us, in terms, you know, someone to get a really bad injury to rule them out for the rest of the season. And I landed on, I think I landed on Tim. Am I right to hold him in that higher regard?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, another injury to one of our centre-backs right now wouldn't be great.
It's true.
If Ben Gibson got scissored by somebody, I'm not entirely sure that would go down fully. But no, I think I'd agree with you, actually, because while we kind of spoke so glowingly about our attacking players earlier on in the pod, we kind of have a few options in that area. We could probably, and we are surviving without a couple of them, Hernandez and Dal being out. And we're kind of, we have got different options there, and we can rotate and we can play different ways with the goalkeeper. And it kind of harks back to what I said earlier about it's not just his ability as a goalkeeper, it's his leadership, it's his kind of command, his voice, his experience, which is crucial. Like, this is a guy who's done a lot of very kind of big things in the game. You know, he's played at the highest level, and he is able to be the kind of guiding hand, I think, for a lot of our players. I think there was a great video that the club may have put out just before the Brentford game, or I think it was after the Brentford game, but the clip was just before it, where Krul basically gave Sorensen a big hug before the game. And kind of, I think that's a little window into the kind of person that he is in the dressing room. I know he is hugely kind of respected by everyone at the football club. So yeah, I think, and you know, I'll admit when we first signed him, I wasn't sure, and he wasn't very convincing in the first few months of his time here, and my kind of doubts remained at that point. But fair play to the club and Daniel Farke for kind of persisting, and you know, we're getting the rewards of that now, where we have a goalkeeper who's doing everything we can expect of him, really. What I would say is only 2 clean sheets from 9 in the league so far this season, and we have conceded more goals than any other team currently in the top 6 in the Championship. So I think there's still maybe more to come from Krul, and kind of the thing maybe I'm most encouraged by is his kind of influence, and Hanley and Gibson, and that triangle of, I don't know if that feels safe to me, that triangle of Krul, Hanley and Gibson.
Well, I think they've all been promoted from the Championship, haven't they? So that's not a bad base to have. It's interesting you said that. One of the things that stood out to me in the piece that Michael wrote was Krul saying to Jamal Lewis when they were on the I think it was when they were on the Open Top bus tour, you know, you're going to hate me at times next season because I will be getting on your case if, you know, when we can see goals, which obviously they inevitably did. Yeah, I think that relationship that he has with his defenders, you feel like it's really strong. You feel like he's someone that works on that, and that's important to him. And I think that's
you want that from your goalkeeper, don't you? You think of Peter Schmeichel and him burning the back of Gary Neville's ears with his his own very version of kind of the hand dryer treatment. That'd be very different. The hair dryer, the hair dryer treatment. I think you want that voice. You want that vocal presence from your goalkeeper, and he really is that. And he seems to love it here. He seems to be really enjoying, because he could play probably at Premier League level. I don't know if anyone has actually kind of been interested in him since he's become good here at Norwich, but he really wants to be here. I get that sense. And he's such an important kind of individual for the squad, and an important player for the team. Like, and I think there are 2 different things, but 2 kind of equally important things.
Yeah, he does feel like someone who we're lucky to have.
Yeah.
Right, so we have spoken at length and tried to sound like experts for a while now. Now, this is the part of the podcast where we prove ourselves to not really know much at all, because we have to make predictions at this point. It's the part which Michael dubs, "This is just like fantasy football." Obviously, we have 7 days until our next podcast. We have 2 games in that time, 2 away games last week and 2 away games, 2 home games, I should say, in the week coming up. A quick point of order, the Millwall game has been brought forward from 7:45 p.m. to 7 p.m. So make sure you don't miss it. Otherwise, you'll miss the entire first half. And then we've got Swansea at home at 3 p.m. on Saturday. I should say, actually, let's give Stuart Hodge some credit where it's due. He said he could see us taking 4 points or more from the 2 games. He was absolutely right. I said that Todd Campbell was going to score. He played 65 minutes. So I was less successful. So that's the two ways that it can go. So Ben, I'm going to ask for some kind of prediction. It doesn't have to be even related to the game. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I'm gonna go for a game related prediction. I think we will beat Millwall, and I think the score will be 2-0. And then I think Swansea is gonna be a tough match. I really like the look of Swansea this season. I think they're a proper outfit and proper contenders in the Championship. But for me, I'm looking forward to the spectacle of that game, especially if we come off the back of a win against Millwall, because we would have won so many games recently. I think we can go into that game with a bit of freedom. And, you know, if we don't necessarily get a win, it's not the end of the world. So I think maybe that'll be a good game, maybe like a 1-1 or a 2-2. Let's go for a 2-2. So a 2-0 win over Millwall and a 2-2 against Swansea. Okay. I'm just trying to think if there's anything outside of the matches that I could predict. I'm trying to think, like, who's going to play left back? Is he going to persist with Sorensen? Like, maybe we'll see Michael McGovern play left back.
Well, I mean, Michael McGovern might be third choice for we know. Blessed with left backs at the moment, are we? Well, maybe we'll see some more minutes for Ballymumba. Quite liked him coming on in a random left wing role on Saturday. So I'll go
the for new Marco Stiepermann, the new Marco Stiepermann kind of fullback winger.
Well, yeah, hybrid. I don't know whether I'd rather see McGovern or Stiepermann at left back, to be honest. That's up for debate. I mean, it occurred to me actually that these were two really memorable games. I mean, there were so many, many memorable games from Ding 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 2 years ago. The Millwall game, obviously 4-3 at home. You know, anyone who was there will always remember that one. Swansea game, completely different match, which we won 1-0 thanks to a moment of quality from Emi Buendia. But you feel like they're going to be two completely different tests. Millwall will bring the physicality. Swansea, I don't know if I'm completely living up to stereotypes here, but as I understand, they play the nice passing stuff. Millwall are going to be a bit more physical under Gary Rowett. Do you know what? I'm going to go for two wins, and I'm completely setting myself up for a fall next week, but I'm saying two wins to Norwich City.
Scores, Steve, please. Steve.
Oh, God, do I have to be scores. That specific?
Yeah. Goal scorers, assists.
I'm not prepared to get into this game, but I will say 1-0 against Millwall, and then I'll go for a... I think there could be goals in that Swansea game, same as you. I reckon... Let's say we edge it 3-2. 3-2. Okay, and I think that's pretty much all we've got time for. So I hope you've enjoyed it. On the Ball will be with you every step of the way this season and, of course, during the upcoming lockdown. And you can subscribe via your podcast player of choice. It's available completely for free for anyone on your usual podcast player, and it will be ad-free to subscribers of The Athletic via the app. If you like what we're doing on the Ball, please leave a review and a rating and spread the word of our efforts across the Norwich City world. And if you want to get in touch or ask a question for the next podcast or any future podcast, then you can send me a message on Twitter. I'm at NCFC numbers, or I dare say Michael will be checking his Twitter in the next few weeks as well. So at Michael J Bailey for him. Thanks very much, Ben. That was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Very much. Very enjoyable.
Excellent. Well, stay safe and stay well, everyone. And we look forward to welcoming you back again next week for another On the Ball, a Norwich City podcast from The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.